We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back, guys. DGS. Happy Thursday. A few minutes past 5 p.m. Time for the Think Tank. Been looking forward to this all week long. Brenda Talent is here. Good to see you, Brenda. How are you?
Good to be here, Dave.
Our very own Mark Cox hanging out and staying late for us. Appreciate it.
Hey, glad to do it, Dave. Thank you.
And for the first time ever on Think Tank, Jane Duker, who you will hear with Mark or on KMOX. Good to have you on. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to my first Think Tank.
So, introduce yourself to those in my audience who may not know you.
Ah, well, let's see. I do host with Mark Reardon every Friday. We do the roundtable, and Brenda always is generous and comes in with us. And then we do another hour. But I'm in my real life, I am a governmental lawyer and consultant. So this
Impressive.
Is what I do. This is my job. As weird as it is, it's my job.
Where'd you go to law school?
SLU, right here in town.
So. I graduated from law school in 90 from WashU, and a couple days ago, I was over at Chris's Pancakes,
mm-hmm.
walking out, and all the kids were leaving their first exam.
Oh, bless
their
hearts.
And it just brought it all back.
Oh, it is. It's post-traumatic stress.
Oh,
that first year law school exams, I was 92. I'm like right behind you. And yeah, the post-traumatic stress of first year exams, nothing is worse than that.
I remember back then was pre-everything, and you had a little blue postcard with your grades, and you would just run home every day and nope, no blue postcard.
Right.
And then finally you'd get it and oh God, it's just like.
You actually had to call to find out if you passed the bar.
Yes.
Stressful. Yeah, no computers, nothing. So we are ancient.
Were the law professors as outwardly biased as the three we saw in Washington, D.C. yesterday?
Mine weren't as aggressive. No. Everyone's an individual human being.
Sure.
But they were just so much more aggressive than I thought they would be. I thought they'd be out of place, but they took charge. How did that hit you, Jane?
I think the whole idea of having lawyers come in to explain, quote, the legalities of impeachment is kind of a joke. Because, first of all, impeachment is what the House of Representatives says it is.
There's nothing
just more simple than that. And so no court is ever going to review it. So having a legal expert, to me, seems kind of superfluous. But both sides did it. But I don't. I just don't understand it. And I don't think, the public cares what professors say.
I thought it was meant to come across as like, here, let us bring the experts. And the experts are going to tell you what ought to happen. And then you can weigh these different experts and come to your conclusion on who you agree with.
I just don't agree. Yeah, I just think that's they're a jury. The House of Representatives is the jury. I don't think that experts coming in saying what they should do.
Actually, I think the Senate's the jury.
Well, at least for this part of the process.
Right, yeah.
And so, as I've always said, the House decides what's impeachable or not. And they're going to make a decision on that. And it's going to be a political one. And let's all just admit that.
And this House very well probably will impeach. And a House in 50 years could look at it and go, this is ridiculous. I mean, I think Gerald Ford was the one who said what you just said, that it's a high crime is whatever an individual House decides it is at any individual time. And that's the truth. There's no appeal.
Right.
There's
nothing to be done except for that process. And it is interesting because time will be interesting.
Yeah.
And you'd like to think that you don't know what history, how it's going to treat this. And so anybody who says they do, I think they're full of baloney.
Well, it's a scam, though, and I assume that Dave will want to talk about this at some point. But as an attorney or as attorneys, you can't believe the process to this point has had any semblance of fairness. I mean, Jane, you and I got into it on Twitter about this a little bit one day, but my point was, as a defense attorney, you wouldn't go into a courtroom and let a prosecutor run roughshod over you, not let you call a single witness to defend your client. And then whatever comes out of that is not going to have any comparison to fairness. It's just not.
Well, again, to me, that's more of a political argument because, frankly, his trial is in the Senate. It's not criminal. There is no traditional due process that attaches to this. So, I mean, from that standpoint, there is sort of legal standards that apply. And so, again, it comes down to politically, You know, are Democrats, you know, getting the public to believe that this is fair or not fair? That's what it comes down to. But he'll get his due process that's, you know, that's allowed and required by law in the Senate. And and what's interesting is, you know, rightfully, the president is focusing on the Senate trial because that's where this is going to be. And I think his challenges are going to be that, you know, witnesses will be called. And when he fails to allow witnesses to come, that's going to become far more apparent in the Senate trial. And these procedural arguments, I think, are going to have a lot more weight.
But I think the conclusion's foregone. I mean, I think we know what's going to happen. I also question how much any of this is going to matter next year. In November, where I think the more relevant questions will be, who are the candidates and how's the economy doing?
Well, I mean, I agree from a political standpoint. And if we nominate a socialist, that's going to be a problem. And Trump will be reelected. And I've been pretty open about that. But I also think that there is a sliver of middle, small though it might be, of people who haven't decided who this may matter to. And
I don't know that it will, because, you know, you look at this whole process and you try to stand back, and it's hard because everyone's in their echo chamber. But really, I ask the question, and other people have also, is the president prohibited from pursuing a policy that he otherwise would be entitled to pursue just because he has a political motive? And the answer to that has got to be, yes, you can.
Well, but
because
if
the answer is no, you can't, then why the heck is Pelosi pursuing a process which she otherwise is entitled to pursue, but we all know she's got a political motive? And these are political actors. Of course, they're going to have political motives. And that's, to me, the fascinating thing about this is, what kind of standards are we setting for the future? I think there's a very dangerous precedent being set at this time, and I think we all should be concerned about
that. The problem
that.
Is your premise. The premise, the idea that he can go ask a foreign government to get dirt on a political opponent for his own benefit, that's where your analysis falters.
Well, that's the way you've phrased it, because the way I understand the issue is really, it's again, and it's a question of, is there a plausible basis for this? Is it legitimate for the government, for the U.S. to be concerned whether there's corruption in the Ukraine when we're giving them aid? If the fact is that what happened with the Bidens is a plausible issue to explore, then the fact that he might take some enjoyment out of it doesn't make it illegitimate.
If it were so legitimate, then why did he abandon it as soon as the whistleblower came forward? That's what makes it
abandon
look...
Abandon what? But again, you're making an assumption that he withheld the aid until he got the investigation. The investigation never happened. Right. The White House meeting never happened, but the aid was released.
So he gave up. Why did he get, if it was so legitimate and it was so awful, then why did he give up as soon as the whistleblower came forward? I mean, he gave him the aid and he didn't require the interview because he got busted.
I love it when Democrats are suddenly so worried about military aid to the Ukraine when all Obama gave them was blankets.
The point is not, I mean, the underlying issue of helping Ukraine, I disagreed with Obama on. I think we needed to help them against Russia. I believe Russia is an enemy. This president doesn't. And so that's a problem. But the idea that you go to a foreign government and you threaten something that was passed by Congress. This
Biden
was a law.
Did it, though.
Well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't make it right. If Congress passed a law that said we're giving money to the Ukraine to support them in their war with Russia, then that's what these diplomats and these people were trying to effectuate. And he wanted to hold it up for his own personal gain.
Thinking as an attorney, my defense strategically would be very similar to what you just said, Brenda, that I don't know if Trump's capable. I don't know if he's capable of allowing any sort of concession. Because it's perfecto. Everything's the best. But if I were his attorney, I would argue that every president has held up aid to someone. And Ukraine is a known bad actor when it comes to corruption. And Trump said, I need you to commit to rooting out all of this corruption, including the Bidens, if they are a part of it, because they don't get a pass. Just because he was vice president or just because he might be my political opponent. I think if he had actually said that
he'd win.
Well, he'd be fine.
I think where people are very uncomfortable with the notion that political actors act with political motives. They do it all the time. And this is sort of it's taking the scab off or whatever to reveal the underside of all of this.
Like what Mulvaney said. Right. Get over it.
Yeah, Mulvaney was the only honest one in the room, and they probably should have just leaned
agree.
Into him.
Couldn't agree more.
Just lean in and do and,
I saw
and
that
it.
Live. I rarely see these things live. And I saw him do that live. And whoever was with me at the time, I forget, I'm like, that's the first honest thing I've heard in a really long time.
And people would have believed it.
Yeah.
And the problem is, since he abandoned what Mulvaney said, that to me was a very bad move, because it, you know, it looked more like a cover-up. When he just said, hey, this is, you know, there's lipstick on the pig here.
It's the way we
and
do
he
business.
He just did it. And I was like, okay, at least that's honest. Because I think, look, the bottom line is, to me, it seems that the facts are not that much in dispute. He probably, this was untoward at best. I firmly believe it's illegal. I don't like when people who are in elective office use that office for personal gain. I get politics. Everybody plays politics, but we just had somebody go to jail for that. And I don't ever want to be in a position where people don't get in trouble for doing that.
So what I want is to go back and look at the transcript of every call that Barack Obama ever had with a foreign leader trying to influence the outcome of something in that country before we gave them aid. It happens all the time, and it's happened in every
presidency. For his personal benefit, though?
How do you know?
For his election?
Wait a minute.
Have you looked at the transcript? Bear in mind that the so-called whistleblower here was a committed enemy and an anti-Trumper, Eric Ciaramella. He's been outed. We know who it is. We also now know that Lieutenant Colonel Vindman is the one that fed him the secondhand information that he put in the whistleblower report. That's all out there for everybody to understand. So it gets back to the fact that Donald Trump is a disruptor, and people in the establishment don't like what he's doing, and they needed a way to get him out of office.
I just think we're back to the issue is, is it impermissible for any political actor to pursue a course of action regarding policy, where they have a political motive or a political benefit? They do it all the time.
I mean,
if we were to find an email that Nancy Pelosi sent to her caucus saying, we're going to pursue an impeachment because this is going to help us win more seats, do we then go after her because, in fact, she's abusing the power of her office? No, because people make those decisions all the time. The real question is this a legitimate policy? I think the issue would be a one where he'd be far more at risk is if you could show, look, we've investigated this. We've looked at the Bidens. There's no corruption. Everything was above board. Drop it, President Trump. And he didn't drop it. Then I think you've got a problem.
Yeah. What if it were, this had not happened. It happened, but we didn't know it. And the next Democrat president, Elizabeth Warren, is elected. And she has a similar call like this. Sorry, Mark. Sure. And she said, hey, Ukraine, I want you to investigate all this corruption, including Trump and Jared Kushner. No, I don't know. I just think
nobody'd say a word.
Yeah,
it
wouldn't be an issue.
I disagree, because I do think that this and what we have not talked about is the whole Rudy Giuliani factor, who is in Ukraine right now
doing a documentary.
I mean,
he is.
I know
he's doing a documentary.
He is going to dig this president's grave. So I have a huge problem with this whole, you know, offline process. If you want to hire Rudy Giuliani to be your Secretary of State or your ambassador or whatever to Ukraine, great. But this offline process is, I think, very problematic, and giving non-state actors like actual powers is very dangerous.
I wouldn't hire Rudy Giuliani to fix a traffic ticket.
Amen.
I'd be afraid I'd go to jail. Quick break, right back. DGS. Welcome back, guys. DGS Think Tank, Brenda Talon, Jane Duker, and our very own Mark Cox. A couple of just maybe in the weeds observations. One ticky tack. I was watching live this morning with Nancy Pelosi, and I laughed out loud. It's not a humorous event, but when she said, with our hearts full of love, we're going to impeach the president. And I was just like, why did they do this? Why did they say these things? Either they think we're so stupid, or we just are that stupid. And then secondly, I saw a second news conference she did. And she said that by the president availing himself of the court system to fight the witnesses and fight the process, that is obstruction of justice. And I don't want to live in a country where anyone availing themselves of the court system is an obstruction of justice. Because if I am sued for something or accused of something and I'm good for it, I get to avail myself of the court system until a judge says, stop coming here. That was really troubling to me. And I don't think she misspoke. I think she really, because others in leadership have said those kinds of things. I mean, Trump may be trying to run the clock out. He may be good for all of this. But anyone, you're not above the law, but he's not below the law. Right. He gets to go to court the same way we all do. And I just think that's really chilling and dangerous.
Jonathan Turley made that point yesterday as he tried to talk the Democrats off the cliff. He said, if you do this, if you try to make it an impeachable offense to go to court, you're the one breaking down the system. Effectively, that's what you're doing here. This is what you're trying to do in the shortest period of time ever: conduct an impeachment hearing with very little input from the accused, and you're going to rush this over to the Senate. This is going to come back to bite you when you have a Democratic president. If the next president's a Democrat, you can fully expect potentially your political rivals on the other side to do the same thing to you. He tried to warn them.
Does anyone know the answer to this? Jane, I'm sure you remember a time when subpoenas meant something. Right. I'd be terrified if I got a subpoena and I'd show up, and evidently you don't have to. Does anyone in the room know that when we eventually go to trial in the Senate, do Rudy Giuliani, Mulvaney, Bolton, Rick Perry, will they be forced to testify, or can they still be held out?
Well, and see, I think that's part of what's going on here, is I think they probably know the end game, because Trump has said, I will never comply no matter what. And maybe some of these people will, because they're afraid of him, will in fact not show up. I think the courts will be the final arbiter on that. And I agree with you that you should not be punished for availing yourself of the court process. But I also think that just because the House right now, and in some of his claims of executive privilege, Rudy Giuliani doesn't get executive privilege. That's a joke. It's a joke, and it's patently frivolous. And that will play itself out. And I think Trump will score some victories in court, and I think he will lose some, and because I think some claims are better than others. And so I think that's a placeholder, because I think they know it's going to come out that this claim of privilege is patently frivolous. And they want to make sure that when the charge goes over, that the charge goes over in the Senate. And as they continue to pursue these documents, which they will, and pursue witnesses, and the courts find if any of them are frivolous, then that charge is been preserved for the Senate trial. I think things will get very different in the Senate, because I think that, one, I think they will enforce more. I think Mitch McConnell's been very quiet for a reason. I think that the Senate committees who've investigated this guy have been like the silence is deafening. I think the idea that this is going to be a cakewalk in the Senate is, I think, overconfident. And so I do think that they will pursue documents. They will spend all that time between the two getting them and the witnesses. And I think that his refusal, because it says, oh, you don't let him have input. That's his choice. He has chosen not to have any input in this entire process.
Jane, the Republicans put out a whole list. I've got it in my computer down the hall of witnesses they wanted to call. And they were all rejected.
Right.
By Adam Schiff.
How about Mulvaney? How about Trump? How about any of them?
Aren't those in the court system? Well, and then we were talking about?
Well, exactly. And so, I mean, but he can't say he hasn't had input. A lot of that was his choice. The fact that the Democrats get to decide that the Bidens is not relevant, that they get to do that. Elections matter. And they get to decide that, and the Republicans would do the same thing. And, you know, I mean, Hillary Clinton sat for 10 hours and during Benghazi, and she showed up. These guys are not showing up. And I think that at some point, not the forever Trumpers, those 30%, nothing is changing. But there may be people who say, wait a minute, why don't you just come and talk?
Yeah, I'm one of those. Yeah. I want to hear from all of them.
Just hear.
And I think
not even from the president, from everybody.
As it stands now, I think Republicans in the Senate have more than enough cover to acquit. Mm-hmm. And no one's ever going to question it other than, you know, very liberal people. Right. But I happen to believe that if you put them under sodium pentothal and you got all those guys in, there would be fire and not just smoke.
Yes.
That's just my personal opinion. The phone call is murky. It's a Rorschach test. Mm-hmm. Vindman and Sondland, same kind of thing. But the inner workings of what happened, that's where the sex
it's
is.
It's always the cover up. It's never the crime. If he had just said, you're damn
he
right, I ordered the code
transcript
red.
The 2 days after they asked for
summary.
It.
Summary. And it's, you know, if he just got up and said, I ordered the code red, I think everybody would say, you know what? It's either, you know that, it's political process, yes or no.
I just think, again, stepping back from this whole process and looking at it, it's not a good reflection on anyone. I think there's plenty of blame and disdain to go around. My real concern is that we watch all of this is really the implications for the future and how we will conduct ourselves, because it does seem sides are polarized. You don't know about the middle, but I think for people watching this, you could look at this and you could say, you know what? This is all about a president who people has viewed as illegitimate. That, you know, his election was illegitimate, and it's all about trying to reverse that process rather than letting the voters do it. Because are we going to get into a situation where our elected officials are making the decisions about who represents us because of the way they conduct themselves in office and use the power that they have to say, you know what? You elected this person, but we don't like them, so we're running them out.
Didn't Republicans get that admonition when they did the Clinton? There was actually less support for the Clinton impeachment than there is for this one.
I would not disagree with that.
I mean, and that had very little to do with what he had in office. And so, you know, I think there's pock on both houses on that.
Well, Brenda said that in a much better way than I would have. But the bottom line is they've been after this president since he got sworn into office. It's all about trying to reverse the 2016 election. And today, Nancy Pelosi chewed out a reporter in her news conference who said, your opponents say that you're only doing this because you hate Donald Trump. And she got mad and angry. And don't you play those games with me. I don't hate anybody. I love everybody. Blah, 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 blah. Of course, we know it's not so much about hate. It's about fear. Because if they thought they could beat him in November 2020, we wouldn't be going through this right now.
Well, what's really funny is why are the Republicans fighting it so much? Because, I mean, look, as a Democrat, if we put up Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren, I mean, I've been very clear, we're going to lose.
Against Pence?
So, I mean, either way, I mean, the end game of this is dubious at best. And so
I agree.
I always say, you know, I don't know why they're screaming so loudly, because nature may take care of this. And, you know, that would be OK, too. And but, you know, if we get somebody like Biden or Buttigieg, I mean, I think things will get interesting.
Or maybe the Democrats are taking care of this, because if they pull Warren and Sanders and Klobuchar and Booker out of the political arena, the fundraising arena, the campaigning arena for a month and a half leading up to Super Tuesday because of the Senate impeachment trial, they're clearing the path for Joe Biden. You should be happy about that.
Well, do they? I mean, it's interesting because I do think the field is winnowing of its own accord. And so, I'm sure that they've all taken that into account when they've made these decisions. I'm sure that is. And I would not underestimate her. And this is why she drives Trump batty, because she's a woman and she's really smart, and she's gotten the better of those of the brawl till now. And it'll be interesting to see if she does.
Marky,
this is a huge
that.
Gamble.
Well, she brought up gender, like it gets under Trump's skin because she's a woman. He loves women.
Not that way, Mark. Not that way.
We can all stipulate to that.
She doesn't have a stage name. So.
Where are we as a nation when this is the process? So this is the process we're focused on, rather than the focus on where are you on the policy, candidates? What are you going to do to help make our lives better? Instead, we're watching all of this reality TV happening in the nation's capital. It's really sad.
That was self-inflicted.
That's right. It's just
the
really sad.
Reality TV star turned this into reality TV.
I would say both sides are guilty of that.
Yes.
My real worry is that no matter what happens, me and my family are still going through this in 2021. Whether it's President Trump, President Romney, President Sanders, like, I'm just afraid this is the game now.
The division?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a terrible
dangerous game. Yeah.
It's dangerous to America. It
to democracy.
Is.
Oh, to be an enemy of the United States? It's the best time in the world to be an enemy of the United States.
Well, and that's why you see them doing the things they're doing. I mean, it's like, you all are distracted. We're going to take over the rest of the
Absolutely.
World.
No,
Trump is the one that made all the world leaders laugh, not the Democrats.
We don't talk about that very much.
And he's livid, which means we're going to get sanctions on Canada because he's offended. I mean, it's embarrassing.
Mark, is it a net gain or a net loss with Trump out there being Trump on the world stage?
Trump owns them. I don't know what Jane's talking about. They don't know what to do with him. When he came into office, since he's been in office, I just heard the Secretary General of NATO say this the other day. They've taken in another $140 million in contributions to fund NATO since he took office. How did that happen? Trump went over there and said, oh, I don't know, if you're not going to pay for it, we're tired of paying for it. Maybe NATO's, you know, not really useful anymore. Everybody freaks out. Suddenly they start paying. The Secretary General said by 2024, by the end of Trump's second term, Jane, they'll have funded it $400 million more in the NATO budget. How's that not effective? How's he not effective on trade? He renegotiated with the EU. He's renegotiated the USMCA, assuming Pelosi ever agrees to sign it. He's negotiating with China, whether you agree with how he's doing it or not. I don't see the problem on the foreign stage. Nobody's making fun of him. He owns them. He owns real estate in their head.
Ask the farmers, ask people who are trying to export their goods about how this trade war is going for them. And that's a problem he's going to have. There's going to be people who are Trumpers, who, you know, farmers and people who produce things, who actually export things out of this country, who are saying, this has not worked for us.
And that seems reasonable, but how did they get to where they were, Jane? That's the question you have to ask, right?
They don't care how they got here.
How did we get in a situation where we're so taken advantage of by China and every trade partner we have? Because all of our previous presidents have played the game and looked the other way when we were taken advantage of. Somebody had to put their foot down, and there has to be some pain that goes along with that. I'm a free market guy, but don't tell me we've got free trade if the other side is penalizing our goods when they go into their country. That's not free.
More with the Think Tank right after this. DGS. Welcome back, guys. DGS. Happy Thursday. Remember to go to Hardee's for breakfast, lunch, or dinner, and make a donation to Operation Food Search. If they don't ask you, just ask them, and you get the DGS sticker. It costs a dollar, but people are giving 5 or 10 or 20, and we are hoping to get to our goal of $100,000 by Christmas, which will all stay here locally and feed people who are hungry. It's pretty straightforward. We're also going to be taking the show out live tomorrow. We're going to be at the Hardee's at Butler Hill Road. One of your only chances to get the new DGS stocking cap and lots of our swag. Once again, every penny. My company paid for all that, so there's no taking the money back or profits. That's just our cost of doing business. Every penny that we bring in between now and Christmas goes to Operation Food Search. So, Jane, I'm going to ask you probably an unfair and not very well stated question.
I love those.
If you can somehow put on a blindfold and take out Donald Trump's Trumpiness. Just the state of the union and the numbers and the economy and so forth. Is that something that you're happy with? And I ask that because I have a very liberal 24-year-old son, and I have this argument with him, and he would say, paraphrasing, he's not here to speak for himself, no, I'm not, because the money is going to the wrong places and the employment's in the wrong places and, you know, traditional discrimination and such. I'm just curious how, because when I see the numbers, I don't like Trump either. But when I see the numbers, I'm like, I can't argue with the numbers.
Well, it is interesting. I mean, he steps on his own message. He doesn't really tout what he ought to be touting. I would say the economy is fine, except for the trade war, which I think is really, and don't tell me that Republicans are not panicked about that, because they are. And so I do think that the trade war is the biggest threat to our economy. And this is a world economy now. We don't get to play isolationist games. And this guy is an isolationist. And I think that is incredibly dangerous for our economy. Now, do I think right now that everything is, you know, horrible? No, but I do think that the market, and I think that business, and I think business leaders in this country are concerned about what the end game is. So is it good? Yes. Is there things on the horizon? I think there's a world slowdown that could be coming. Is it here? Are some people saying the sky is falling maybe before it is? Yes, but I think that is a genuine concern. This guy has managed to make this election about everything but the economy, which is pretty amazing, because usually it's the economy, stupid, and he's managed to sort of piss that away. So I find that fascinating. So yeah, if he were smart, that's all. He would not say another word about anything other than the economy. But I do think income inequality is an issue that's becoming an issue not just for the socialists and the communists and the radical left wing. I think income inequality shows its head in, you know, Medicaid and, criminal justice reform and other things that actually Trump, like the criminal justice reform is an issue he ought to be talking about. He can get people that he wouldn't normally get. But I do think that, you know, there's stuff to talk about. Healthcare is still a very big looming problem for people, and it throws people into bankruptcy, and that's where you get these problems. But we're not even talking about healthcare anymore. We're not talking about anything involving this country. Well, involving this country.
Well, and Congress is otherwise preoccupied. They can't do things like with the Mexico deal, et cetera. Things are on hold for as they're trying to map out this impeachment process.
Well,
so I think for a lot of Americans, again, it's sort of like, wait a minute, why aren't you doing the job we elected you to do? And there are things that can be done to ensure that we're on a better course. I would say the economy is doing well. It's roaring. And we always have different struggles as we go through the ups and downs. But I would say, you know, the economy is also cyclical. I'm not so concerned about the trade wars. I don't like them. I am a free market type, although because of my husband's work, I get the Chinese limitations with dealing with China. I think that there's obviously a lot of push within whichever administration you're talking about to get those issues resolved. And I do believe those people are negotiating, and I would hope that we will see a deal soon.
So let me ask you, Brenda, who's the biggest economic threat to this country? Military and economically, it's China.
Yes, that's
correct. Russia.
That's correct.
And the Democrats have focused us on Russia for the past 3 years like it, you know, they're the ones that did the reset button with Russia, with Hillary Clinton. Who can ever forget that? And making fun of Mitt Romney when he goes, you know, we got to worry about Russia. And Barack Obama says, hey, the 80s called. They want their foreign policy back. Now, suddenly, they're all focused on Russia, 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 China. China is the biggest threat. They're the biggest threat militarily, and although their economy is in the tank right now, they want to be the big 800-pound gorilla
world. They're not a good actor in the trade area.
Correct. They are not. And this president has realized, because he's a businessman first and not a politician, that you got to hit your opponent while they're down. Their economy's down. Now's the time to put the screws to them to get some fair trade policies with China while we can. I think he's on track with that.
So let's take a 30,000-foot view of just American politics. I agree with Jane, who's obviously not a conservative. I agree with you that if the Democrats put up a quote-unquote socialist, let's just talk in shorthand, they're going to lose. Mm-hmm. Is that just a temporary state, though? Do you guys pull out your crystal ball, feel like 20 years from now, it's going to be a very viable political
yes,
party?
I think it's even sooner than that, which look, I'm not a proponent of, but I'm the one, I'm probably fighting the radical left wing in my party as much as anybody is. But I believe that we have a generation of people who firmly believe that government is the answer to everything.
And I would argue that after a few years, reality is going to hit them full in the face. And it's going to bite big time, because where's all the money going to come from? You're either going to have rationing.
No, it's not rationing. Yeah, they're going to take the richest people and they're going to take money from them. That's exactly.
Nope. And they'll be gone because rich people have options. They have options.
Yeah, and they can live in America or not. But I also think that I think the next generation of people think very differently. And you have to look at all the post-industrial nations. And look, I'm not there. I've never been in a place where I thought that the best move for Democrats is to say, you know, Medicare for all. I mean, that's just mortifying to me. And but I do think this generation, they have a completely different view. They have a worldview, and they think that this is just all going to spread out and smooth out.
I agree. Mark, do you agree with that, even though you obviously that's your worst nightmare?
No, I do agree with it. And I listened with fascination to your conversation yesterday with Taliban about that very thing. I mean, he's what, 30, 29, 30? He's like, hey, I hear about this great economy. Where are the $80,000 a year jobs? I want one of those.
Well, I don't know. I can almost
it takes
probably
years to get them.
I can almost tell you the age I was before I ever made $80,000 a year.
And you got out of your parents' basement.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not putting all the pressure on the millennials, but I do see a sea change difference mm-hmm. in my own daughter, who's 24. She just graduated from St. Louis University School of Law. She was raised as Mark Cox's child. She has a lot of conservative tendencies and ideas, but socially, she's got some very different ideas than I do about a variety of things. And I do see that. I don't think she believes some of the things that you talked about Nick believing in, but I do believe that she sees that change coming, and I worry for the future of the country. You can vote your way into socialism, but you usually have to shoot your way out. Just keep that in mind. Venezuela, they took all the guns away. They can't do that.
Well, I think the people who are talking about socialism now are trying to frame it in a different context, obviously. You know, it's sort of Norway or Finland or that kind of socialism where there's more redistribution, but they're definitely private property ownership, that type of thing. I thought I heard a poll recently, though, where they were polling on socialism. And when you start talking about free health care for all, free college for all. And that discussion has been going on for a large part of this year, that people are beginning to say, wait a minute, how do we do that? And so that's why I say I'm hopeful. Maybe it's what keeps me going from a free market perspective, that reality will intrude upon everyone. I mean, we've got deficits that are... We're running them up. Yeah,
we don't even talk about that anymore.
Yeah,
but
we need to, because the bottom line is, what is the end game? And the end game is somebody's going to have to produce something to provide these services, and you're not going to have it if you're redistributing everything.
Yeah.
Which, and I'm sorry, what does that mean? That does mean limited availability, rationing, whatever you want to call it. And I always tell folks, you know what? The people with money, they're going to be fine. It's the rest of us.
Going to go local when we come back, talk about a couple controversies about local prosecutors.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.